mark the end of Pride Month, we decided to talk to one of the most famous drag queens in the world, who happens to be from Wisconsin, the one and only Trixie Mattel.
Step into the plate, I'm Trixie Mattel. Got my name in the game, better learn it well. Cause I'm the MVP, heading up to bat. And I'll go to third base, but I'd never tell that. I got bleached in the
blonde. Trixie Mattel is the stage name of Brian Michael Furcus. Trixie's a Wisconsin native, a UW-Milwaukee alum, and the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars Season 3. I talked to her yesterday about drag, her co-ownership of Wisconsin's oldest gay bar, and more. Well, let's start with some 2021 news here in Wisconsin. You recently became co-owner of the oldest gay bar here in the state. This Is It in Milwaukee. Can you talk about your connection and your hopes for the future of the bar?
Well, you know, if you're gay and you want to buy a bar and you want to feel young, you have to buy one of the old ones, right? you know, I needed a bar where we have sometimes literally 70-year-old men coming to happy hour so that I can feel young. This bar was... started in 1968, and which isn't when I started going there, ha ha ha, but I started going at 21. I'm 31 now, so 10 years ago. And I remember walking in, it was one of my first gay bars I ever went to, and the bartender was like, I don't recognize you. What's your name? Can I make you a drink? And the bartender was George Schneider, who's my co-owner now. We own the bar together, so it was full circle. Basically, I could say, like, it's important to preserve queer spaces and being part of the community. Basically, I want to make sure no matter what happened in my career, I had somewhere to drink for free.
So, and it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. Are there changes in the works? You're not just, like you say, preserving a piece of history here.
Well, I am sort of like a This Is It, the preservation of This Is It society. I am sort of like the leader. So, you know, you would think Trixie buying a bar, I would just walk in and start throwing pink paint on everything. But I really like the bar how it is. It itself is sort of a clubhouse that's been shaped by queer culture for decades. So I'm just about keeping more eyes on what we already have that's great. So, you know, my goal would be to make This Is It more of like a national landmark where people, like in New York, you have Stonewall. And then This Is It, in Milwaukee, you have This Is It, which is actually older than Stonewall.
Now, you're a singer, actor, musician. What made you first realize you wanted to be a performer?
Well, I don't know. I guess I just always liked the idea of, like, dressing up and pretending something was happening. I don't know. Like, that was something I did as a kid that never really went away.
And
costumes and makeup and everything just stayed part of it, the way when you're a kid, dressing up is part of it.
You were here in Wisconsin. You were at UW-Madison, I think, studying performance. Can you talk about the first time you went up in front of people as a drag performer?
Sure. I was in UW-Milwaukee, and I was there studying musical theater. So I was during the day I was taking, you know, singing and dancing and all that. And then at nights, I was doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. And then when I turned 21, I started working in nightclubs. So by the time I finished my college education, I was already doing drag like 3-4 nights a week in Milwaukee, Madison, Chicago. So that was just sort of my career when I finished college. Like, I could pay all my bills performing, so I already felt like, you know, rich.
And now you're a folk musician. You play auto harp and guitar. I want to hear some of your song, Moving Parts. We'll play a little here.
Sometimes there's a danger of choking on the parts. No one gave a warning to the breaking of your heart. Pick up all the pieces and go back to the start. Never losing, only using all your moving parts. All your moving parts.
Love the harmony there. Are you harmonizing yourself in a studio, or do you have a backup there?
No, that was just me and my friend Brandon. We had like a little, that was just a one take. I went in a booth with the harp, and he went in a booth to sing by himself, and we just had glass between us, and we were just like, let's just do it once, and then whatever it is, it is. So that was just us singing it together.
Fantastic. Talk about some of your musical influences. Who inspires you as a musical performer?
Well, you know, I really got into songwriting because of folk music. So I love like Amy Mann and Emmylou Harris and Jason Isbell. I love like song craftsmen's. But I'm also, you know, a performer. And so I really like high concept sort of performance artists too. So I love the B-52s. I love Blondie, I love the Go-Go's. I love Fountains of Wayne is one of my all-time favorite bands. And recently, I don't know, I find inspiration all over the place. I find with Trixie, she kind of shifts decades visually as she sort of shifts musical inspiration. Recently, I've been really into house and EDM, which I would have never thought I would like. And I don't know why. I guess after COVID, I went to my first like nightclub and I was like, oh my God, music. You know, so now I'm like a 31-year-old man who puts on dance music and dances alone in his house.
Can you talk about developing the identity of Trixie? Is this something that is, did she just spring fully formed for your mind or?
Yes, it was very much, I didn't know I was pregnant. Well, I always loved Barbie and I always loved My Little Pony and Polly Pocket and girl toys, but I wasn't really allowed to play with girl toys as a little kid. So when I drafted the character, you know, in the early sketches of it, you know, like the early ideas of it, I guess I knew that women were women. And drag queens pretended to be women. And I wanted to be something more than that. Like something it looks like you would pull the string on the back and it would talk. I wanted to look completely fabricated and factory made. And I wanted this character to be sort of this sort of critique on America's favorite fashion doll. Because my sense of humor is very dark. So I knew if I dressed like a kid's toy, but my jokes and my songs and stuff were very racy, I thought it would be like a winning combination. And it was.
I think a lot of people associate drag specifically with LGBTQ culture, but clearly it's got an audience outside of that as well. What do you think is the appeal of drag performance, in-person shows, TV shows, of course, with RuPaul's Drag Race? What is it that appeals to this wider audience?
Well, you know what's funny? There's certain things that, like, straight culture, I guess, if straight people have a culture, I don't know, but they've always liked drag. They just didn't always call it drag. So if you think of like the movie White Chicks, or if you think of Madea or Mrs. Doubtfire, it's like, well, that all is drag. We just didn't really call it drag. But what's great is people are more and more accepting all the time. And when you become open-minded, you become accepting of things you didn't know about and you find new things you like. I mean, that's just like universal. And I think that in America, especially, we're so afraid of sex and gender, and drag throws a nuclear bomb in all of that. So when you enjoy drag and you go, oh, I thought this was going to be something at its core, drag is really just like, you know, it's your Halloween closet. You're playing dress up and lip syncing for your friends. It's kind of, you know, it can be offensive. There can be, you know, people stapling money to themselves and stuff. But really, at its core, it's just playing dress up.
Now, you're in the same boat as a lot of performers have been this last year plus now. You love to perform in front of people, but that's been shut off by the pandemic. How antsy are you to just get back to your normal schedule of performing?
Oh, I am very ready. Listen, after I was very spoiled because I had, you know, TV shows and my YouTube channel and stuff to do all year. So I had a venue all year, but I miss real people. Like the other day I introduced a film at the Hollywood Cemetery here in LA. I introduced Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and there was 4,000 people there. And when I walked out and they said my name and everyone screamed, I was like, I haven't had this happen in so long. I'm dying to get back on the road with my show Grown Up, because that tour was interrupted in the middle of a world tour. So now I have to go back and listen to the recordings of Grown Up, my tour, and relearn all the cues and stuff.
Are you going to be performing at This Is It, or are there secret plans that you don't want to spill on that yet?
Well, let's just say that, you know, now that I'm part owner, I definitely appear more often. I was there for the end of May, May 30th, I think. I was there performing and we had like a little outdoor shindig. We broke the drink sales record since 1968. We had the most drink sales of all time at the bar. So we're coming out of COVID strong. People are ready to drink, put on fancy shirts, and watch crossdressers twirl.
It's a great place to leave it. Trixie, thanks again for joining us.
Of course. Thank you. See, This Is It.
That was Trixie Mattel, drag queen and new co-owner of Wisconsin's oldest gay bar that's in Milwaukee. Next up, Wisconsin author Dick Wagner joins us to talk about the history of LGBTQ rights here in the state. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you remember when Wisconsin passed the nation's first gay rights law back in 1982? What was your reaction at the time? What questions do you have about Wisconsin's history. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now we're talking about the history of LGBTQ rights in Wisconsin. Our next guest says the state has a history of being ahead of the curve on gay rights. Wisconsin made history in 1982 by passing the first gay rights law in the country. Dick Wagner is an activist and author of two books about Wisconsin's LGBTQ history, We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History, and Coming Out, Moving Forward, Wisconsin's Recent Gay History. He became the first openly gay member of the Dane County Board of Supervisors in 1980. Dick, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here again.
As you write in your books, a lot of people look to the coasts for the history of developments of gay rights in the United States. You say there's a lot of story to tell here in Wisconsin. Can you share a little bit of that with us?
Sure. I may be a Midwest chauvinist, but not all gay history happened on the coast. And as you mentioned, Wisconsin was the first state to pass a gay rights law. In fact, in the decade of the 1980s, the legislature passed five significant pro-LGBTQ measures. And it was passed with both Republican and Democratic support. And I try to reflect that in that the second volume has a foreword by both Senator Tammy Baldwin and former Congressman Steve Gunderson, Republican and Democrat, to show that bipartisan nature.
What is it that led to that bipartisan agreement to do this kind of law that wasn't happening elsewhere in the country?
There were still a lot of progressives from the time of the La Follettes who had gone back into the Republican Party who were in the legislature, and they cast some votes for the early consenting adults bill to decriminalize homosexuality, and they weren't punished for that. In fact, many of them advanced further in their political careers after being supportive of gay rights issues, and so with enough Democrats and some progressive Republicans, Wisconsin moved ahead of the nation in this area.
And you call in your book Wisconsin a gay laboratory of democracy. Was Wisconsin the first stone to fall? Did it lead other states to consider similar legislation?
Yes. In fact, some of the Wisconsin equal rights administrators would go and testify at other states. You know, Wisconsin was issuing the first brochures about state non-discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. It was training how to enforce the law. It was working with the community about how to file complaints. And so Wisconsin really was showing the nation how it could be done ahead of everybody else.
Can you share a little of your own story when you decided to come out and become an openly gay politician at a time when that wasn't a combination of words you usually heard in this country?
No, it wasn't. But part of it was the assassination of Harvey Milk in San Francisco and his testament about urging people to come out. And I had begun to be active with the Gay Center in Madison on their advisory committee, and then was doing fundraisers for them, things like an Alice B. Toklas birthday party. And so it just was a point when I thought I should do it, and I did, and I've never looked back.
Talking to Dick Wagner, longtime activist, former politician, author of two books about Wisconsin's gay history. We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History, and Coming Out, Moving Forward, Wisconsin's Recent Gay History. Dick, we just heard Trixie Mattel talk about her co-ownership now of This Is It, the oldest gay bar in Wisconsin. That's in Milwaukee. A lot of history happens at gay bars. The Stonewall Inn in New York City eventually led to what we now call a Pride Day and Pride Month. Can you talk a little bit about the history of gay bars here in Wisconsin?
Sure. Pre-Stonewall, there were a number of bars that were accepting gay clientele. So we had places where community was being built. And some of the early efforts to organize on behalf of gay rights, they would raise money in those bars, sometimes just from the coat checks. And then you had the Hotel Washington complex, Rodney Shields' bar complex here in Madison. And Madison had passed in 1975 an ordinance on gay rights, and then it was threatened by the Anita Bryant effort across the country. And so Rodney brought the so-called party hardy crew from the bars into the political movement against the Anita Bryant effort with the Magic Picnic here in Madison. And so you had this joining of political forces and social forces to fight back against that, and it was successful. Madison did not repeal its gay rights ordinance, contrary to some other places around the country. And all of that led to the momentum for the state gay rights law that would follow.
Are there a couple of particular individuals you would like to point out and make more household names over the course of that history?
Well, Lloyd Barbie was really the prophet of sex reform in the state, an African-American assemblyman from Milwaukee. And he may have introduced the first marriage equality law just following Stonewall in the 1971 legislature, as well as earlier measures to decriminalize homosexuality and to have non-discrimination based on sexual orientation. So he was one of those real prophets that is often overlooked in Wisconsin.
Now, we've been talking about a lot about this 1982 law. That's just about 40 years ago. Where do you see Wisconsin stacking up since then when it comes to laws, protections related to gay people in Wisconsin?
Well, the laws actually have empowered a whole bunch of organizations and people around the state to organize and come out and feel protected. There's still a lot of fight in Wisconsin that's needed for transgendered rights since we were ahead of the curve and we did not include those, unfortunately, in 82. But Governor Tony Evers right now has been leading some executive actions in that area, and he would be likely to veto any anti-trans laws that might pass the legislature. So we're in a pretty good place, but not as good as we should be.
A big part of the story, especially back in the 80s, was the AIDS crisis, which hit, especially in the early days, the gay community hardest. Can you talk about how Wisconsin weathered that decade or so in the early days?
Well, Wisconsin actually had some important early leadership in Governor Earle, who, with his health secretary, got in contact with the State Medical Society. And they initially put out a statement very strong in terms of urging humane treatment for AIDS patients. And then the state Department of Equal Rights ruled that AIDS was a disability and would be protected under state law. And so this is a time when, under the Reagan National Administration, they were saying you could fire AIDS people. And here in Wisconsin, because of the leadership of the Earle administration, we were being protected. And indeed, Governor Earle also supported HIV confidentiality provisions at a time when testing was talked to about as a way to try and quarantine and fire people who might be HIV positive.
Part of the reason, Dick, I think you wrote your books, if I understand correctly, was to make sure we don't forget this history we've been talking about so far. Why is it important to you that, that we keep these stories front and center?
Well, it's important to me because this is part of Wisconsin's tradition, an openness and a willingness to embrace people and to evolve our laws to reflect changing society. The Wisconsin Idea, which talked about how the boundaries of the state, if you think of the social boundaries at the time when President Van Hise of the university spoke of that, it did not include LGBTQ people. Today, clearly, LGBTQ people are part of the state of Wisconsin, and so all of this history is important so that we become a more inclusive society, and that's an important story of Wisconsin.
And in our last just minute or so, what part of that ongoing story are you watching right now in 2021?
I'm watching how we begin to articulate how trans rights and knowledge are growing. One of the things that was important to me was that Wisconsin gay media helped dispel the ignorance about homosexuality. And today there's tremendous ignorance about trans issues, and we need to dispel that ignorance so people can come to rational questions and rational answers in dealing with the trans community.
Do you see an opportunity to spread that word and bring people together on an issue like this that we could do in 1982?
Yes, there are opportunities, and local communities have been advancing some of those issues in their local ordinances. And again, that was a pattern that occurred in the 70s where we used local political power to build non-discrimination ordinances like Madison and Milwaukee and Dane County before the state ordinance. And so there is still an effort in Wisconsin to build this kind of effort from the ground up, and that leads me to hope.
Dick, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to do it.
That's Dick Wagner, activist and author of two books about Wisconsin's LGBTQ history, We've Been Here All Along, Wisconsin's Early Gay History, and Coming Out, Moving Forward, Wisconsin's Recent Gay History.